$250,000 a year from the effects of poverty. That is contrary to the biblical call to life. It is contrary to the call of the ancient prophets that says, woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights and make women and children their prey, P-R-E-Y. It's contrary to the call of Jesus that we're supposed to be about life and good news to the poor. And it's contrary to the Declaration of Independence that we are supposed to be about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and contrary to the Constitution, promised to establish justice and equal protection under the law. We are a movement of life. What we're saying is, and on Saturday, we're having Black people, white people, brown people, Asian people, Native people, gay people, straight people, Republicans, Democrats, veterans, non-veterans. These are the voices you will hear, poor and impacted people on the stage. It's not a march and a rally and an assembly, really.
We have 10 seconds.
For people to come and talk for people, people will talk for themselves. We are the resurrection and not the insurrection.
Well, we want to thank you both so much for being with us. Bishop Dr. William Barber and Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chairs of the Poor People's Campaign, holding the Mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington on Saturday. Oh, and Liz, I also want to congratulate your sister Jean Theo Harris. The film The Rebellious Life of Mrs. Rosa Parks, based on Jean's best-selling book by the same title, just premiered last night at the Tribeca Film Festival, directed by our former Democracy Now! Producer Yoruba Richin, as well as Johanna Hamilton. It is fantastic, not to be missed by anyone. It was at the Tribeca Film Festival. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Wormanoff, Camille Baker, Tarina Ndura, Sam Alkoff, Tamer Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Conlon. On Monday, a Juneteenth special. Don't miss it on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website, kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Governance and Policy Committee meets quarterly on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon sees its first monkeypox case. A COVID vaccine for young children should be available soon. And in international news, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson visits Ukraine. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 17th. 2022. I'm Josh Salem. The Oregon Health Authority has reported the state's first probable case of monkeypox. Monkeypox is classically described as a disease that begins with flu-like symptoms, including fever, fatigue, and a single swollen lymph node. Infected patients develop a rash about a week later, first on the face, and then on the extremities, and eventually the trunk. The rash can progress with painful blisters that fill with pus and crust over. Symptoms usually start within 7 to 14 days after exposure. The disease typically requires prolonged close contact to spread from person to person. Dr. Richard Lehman with the Oregon Health Authority said it, quote, spreads between people primarily through direct contact with infectious sores, scabs, or body fluids. Less commonly, it can be spread by respiratory secretions during prolonged face-to-face contact. The risk to other people is generally very low, end quote. The Oregon patient is a man who traveled to a country where monkeypox is currently prevalent. Confirmation testing is being done at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Currently, there are 84 monkeypox cases across 18 states. Last month, Washington State related the news of its first case. No deaths have been reported. A monkeypox vaccine can be given to people who've been exposed under certain circumstances. It can prevent the virus or decrease the severity of the disease after someone has been exposed. Health officials said members of the public who haven't been exposed do not need this vaccine. The first patient remains isolated and is following recommendations from health professionals, according to state health officials. The FBI knew in advance about the alleged Normandale Park shooter, according to an investigation by OPB. Benjamin Smith, the man who allegedly shot and killed June Knightley and injured four others near Northeast Portland's Normandale Park earlier this year, was reported to the Portland Police non-emergency line in May of 2021. The FBI also confirmed agents spoke with Smith months before the shooting. The agency wrote in a statement, quote, "The FBI spoke to Benjamin Smith in 2021, and based upon applicable federal guidelines, no further investigative actions were taken based upon the available information," end quote. It's the first acknowledgement the FBI has made that it investigated Smith prior to the February shooting. Until yesterday, the FBI had declined multiple requests for comment. On February 19th, Smith, 43, allegedly came out of his home and started yelling misogynist slurs at a small group of people who were holding back traffic for a racial justice march. Attempts to de-escalate failed, and Smith drew a handgun, firing at the group. An armed bystander then shot and critically injured Smith. Several people had flagged Smith's violent online behavior to the FBI, going back to at least 2006. For example, Smith's former roommate said he had bragged about the FBI contacting him in 2021, with concerns about his potential for violent behavior. In addition, a member of Smith's family tried to warn local law enforcement. His second cousin, RJ Smith, called Portland's non-emergency line after receiving a death threat from his cousin on Facebook Messenger, 9 months before the Normandale shooting. RJ Smith said a dispatcher at the non-emergency line told him he should file a report with his local law enforcement in Indiana, where he lives. Portland's Bureau of Emergency Communications confirmed the call took place and that the caller was referred to his local agency, which had jurisdiction over the issue. The FBI claims thousands of tips a day come through its call line and that it is limited in actions it can take when no laws have been broken. It states it has no authority to take action based on an individual's political views, position, or other beliefs. However, the FBI has used Oregon's red flag law to address potential threats before they arose. Red flag laws allow family or law enforcement officials to temporarily remove someone's firearms if they pose a threat to themselves or others. Some who knew Benjamin Smith said he became more radicalized and violent during the Obama administration, and that his radicalization accelerated during the 2020 racial justice protests. Young children, including babies as young as 6 months old, are much closer to getting COVID vaccines. Food and Drug Administration advisors just gave the go-ahead for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for children under five, the last age group to gain vaccine access. Pfizer's initial clinical study suggested its vaccine is 80% effective in preventing children from getting the coronavirus, but it was based on just 10 cases of COVID in that group. The Moderna vaccine trial, tested among more children during the most recent Omicron wave, was about 50% effective. The vaccines are said to be very effective at preventing illness with symptoms, and more data should emerge on their ability to prevent hospitalizations and severe disease. Experts expect the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines will have similar efficacy rates as more data become available. Notable differences between the two do exist. The Pfizer vaccine is indicated for children between the ages of 6 months and 4 years, and the Moderna vaccine is for children between the ages of 6 months and 5 years. The Pfizer vaccine comes in three doses that are about 1/10 the strength of an adult dose. The Moderna vaccine comes in two doses that are about 1/4 as strong as an adult dose. To date, more than 400 children under 5 years old in the U.S. have died from COVID-19. And thousands more have been hospitalized. Parents do have some concerns. the Food and Drug Administration has been investigating rare incidents of teenage boys and young men showing heart inflammation after receiving the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. But the chance of getting heart inflammation from COVID infection is actually higher than getting it from the vaccine. Long-term impairment from the vaccine-related inflammation has not been seen, but the inflammation resulting from coronavirus infection can be severe and can last for years. Other disease-related side effects have been reported, including seizure disorders, developmental delays, and personality changes. Dr. Bradley Olson, medical director of the Randall Children's Pediatric Care at the Legacy Emanuel Medical Center, said, quote, "If I had a child in the 6 month to 4 year age window, I would be first in line to get them immunized because the likelihood of them having a serious illness from a COVID-19 infection is much higher than any adverse reaction to the vaccine. Oregon has given out more than 3 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine in the state over the past year and a half, and there has been very few adverse vaccine events," end quote. Health clinics in Oregon anticipate receiving their first vaccine shipments in the next couple of weeks. Sunday will be the second year Juneteenth is celebrated as a federal holiday. But it's also not new for those who have been commemorating the day for a long time, like the grandmother of Juneteenth, Opal Lee. KBOO's Grant Button has more on the story.
The 95-year-old Texan, known as the grandmother of Juneteenth, will celebrate this weekend as she has for the past 9 decades, but with the added knowledge that she was instrumental in securing the day as a federal holiday. 6 years ago, Opal Lee decided to walk from her home in Fort Worth to Washington, D.C. to promote awareness about the significance of Juneteenth. Lee traveled about 2.5 miles each day to symbolize the 2.5 years Black Texans waited for their freedom after Abraham Lincoln abolished slavery in 1862. Lee says she's heard the many stories about why it took so long for news of the Emancipation Proclamation to reach Texas, but she prefers to think about what it meant to her ancestors.
When the people came in from their labor and somebody read that general order to them, we started celebrating, and we've been celebrating ever since.
In 2021, President Joe Biden signed a bill making Juneteenth a national holiday, which means federal and some local offices will be closed, as well as banks and the U.S. Post Office. Even as a child, Lee spent Juneteenth picnicking with her family in a predominantly white Fort Worth neighborhood. At age 12, she watched a mob of 500 white supremacists burn her family's house to the ground with no arrests made. She says the experience led her to a life of teaching, activism, and most recently, campaigning.
If people have been taught to hate, they can be taught to love. I want them to know that freedom is for all of us. None of us are free until we're all free.
And Lee believes many more problems in America could be solved if everyone pulled together.
We need to address joblessness and homelessness, and everybody needs a decent place to stay. And climate change, there's so many disparities that if we work together, we can eradicate.
Juneteenth celebrations will include freedom tours, reenactments, parades, concerts, and more. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
Healthcare workers are often indirect victims of gun violence. Eric Tegetoff has more on this story.
People across the nation are continuing to discuss gun violence in the wake of 2 prominent mass shootings in Texas and New York. The conversation brings up painful memories for communities that have experienced them in the past, and a reminder that this violence hurts a wide circle of people, including healthcare professionals. Linda Pond is president of the Oregon Nurses Association and was working at a Springfield hospital when a shooter killed 2 and injured 25 at a nearby school in Eugene.
You can't just look at the immediate impact of something. You have to look at the long-term impact, not just on families, but every person whose lives is touched. Be it a doctor, be it a nurse, be it a social worker, be it a minister, be it the psychologist that takes care of them 20 years later as they're processing their PTSD.
Victims of the 1998 shooting at Thurston High School were brought to Pond's Hospital. She spoke in Washington, D.C. last Friday at a media event before the weekend's March for Our Lives rallies across the nation. On Sunday, U.S. senators announced they'd reached a bipartisan deal on a number of gun safety laws. Pond again was on duty in 2015 when another shooter killed 9 at a community college in Roseburg. Several of the victims were transferred to her hospital. She knows people who have been personally impacted by gun violence, especially at the Springfield incident, and who feel the anguish every time a shooting happens.
A lot of folks that are victims of these traumas can't be active the sport because the pain is too deep. It's too real. So then it becomes the responsibility of those of us that have seen it, that are not that immediately impacted, to take our experiences and their experiences forward and share the stories.
Pond hopes lawmakers can set aside their differences to ensure gun violence doesn't take any more victims.
This shouldn't be a political issue. This is a humanitarian issue.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
President Biden signs bill reducing ocean shipping costs. Mayra Flores will be the first Mexican-born congresswoman. And the U.S. Senate passes benefits for veterans exposed to toxic chemicals. With more on those stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
9 major shipping companies consolidated into 3 alliances control the vast majority of ocean shipping in the world.
As part of his plan to lower costs for Americans struggling with inflation, President Biden signed a bill to reduce shipping costs and lessen the power ocean carriers have over importers, exporters, and consumers. The Federal Maritime Commission will investigate complaints and analyze carrier charges. Meanwhile, it's been reported the president is inviting oil industry executives to meet next week to discuss record-high gas prices. The president also dismissed the notion of a potential recession in an interview with the Associated Press. Former U.S. Treasury Secretary and Obama administration advisor Larry Summers said over the weekend a recession is likely in the next 2 years. According to a recent Gallup poll, most Americans say inflation is now the most important problem facing the nation. The January 6 committee's third public hearing focused on former President Donald Trump's efforts to convince former Vice President Mike Pence not to certify the 2020 election results. The committee also presented evidence Trump allies were aware his plans to overturn the election had no legal basis. Democrat California Representative Pete Aguilar.
The president knew there was a violent mob at the Capitol when he tweeted at 2:24 p.m. that the vice president did not have the, quote, courage to do what needed to be done.
The Senate has passed the bipartisan Honoring Our Pact Act, which will enable veterans exposed to toxic substances to receive proper benefits and care. Comedian and veterans advocate John Stewart.
This doesn't solve anybody's problem. This just removes the burden from their fight that never should have been there in the first place.
Health officials called on Congress Thursday to approve emergency supplemental funding for the coronavirus pandemic. The Department of Health and Human Services, Dawn O'Connell.
Testing continues to be an important part of our COVID response. We have made significant progress in increasing testing supply, availability, and affordability over the past year.
The Senate Armed Services Committee endorsed a $45 billion increase to President Joe Biden's military spending plans, blowing past the administration's Pentagon budget for a second straight year. The rebuke comes after lawmakers added roughly $30 billion to the White House's previous defense spending proposal. South Texas Republican Mayra Flores will be the first Mexican-born woman to serve in the U.S. Congress. Flores garnered 51% of the vote in Texas's 34th district, winning the special election without a runoff. For the first time since Reconstruction, a Republican will represent the Rio Grande Valley. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be sunny, with a low of 54 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will see sun as well, with a high of 71. Today in history, in 1885, the Statue of Liberty, a gift from France to the people of the United States, arrived in New York Harbor. The quote of the day is from President Grover Cleveland, the former New York governor who presided over the state's dedication. He said the statue's stream of light shall pierce the darkness of ignorance and man's oppression until liberty enlightens the world. The Supreme Court looks to overturn the constitutional right to abortion. Some prosecutors around the U.S. say they will not enforce some of the anti-abortion laws that GOP-led states are likely to implement. About 26 states are expected to ban abortion if Roe v. Wade is weakened or overturned. But many of those Republican-led states have abortion clinics nestled in the large metropolitan areas with Democratic district attorneys. Anti-abortion laws in the U.S. can punish pregnant women, but they tend to target physicians who could face loss of their medical license or be sentenced to prison for performing the procedure illegally. Other restrictions would penalize those who assist in an abortion, and some could require women who underwent the procedure to testify against her medical or other providers. District attorneys in general have wide discretion in whom they charge with crimes. It is not unusual for prosecutors elected in Democratic counties to resist bringing charges under various GOP-backed mandates. Some examples include voting restrictions, limits on certain protest activities, laws aimed at LGBTQ+ people, and restrictions on mask requirements throughout the COVID-19 outbreak. In 2020, more than 70 prosecutors around the country publicized that they would not bring charges under stringent laws that states have passed against abortion because they felt healthcare decisions should not be criminalized. Texas is among 13 states that have so-called trigger laws, measures that would ban most abortions and take effect almost automatically should Roe be overturned in late June or early July. A Texas woman was recently indicted for murder by a grand jury, allegedly causing, quote, the death of an individual by self-induced abortion, end quote. Stark County District Attorney Gosha Allen Ramirez quickly moved to dismiss the charges, pointing out the woman hadn't violated any state laws. Lawyers in many U.S. jurisdictions must win elections in order to take over the top prosecutorial role in their community. A variety of Republican hopefuls have publicly stated their intention to fully enforce the strictest anti-abortion laws, while Democratic candidates appear to hope their resistance will be enough to attract voters in key states. St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Wesley Bell, a Democrat, said about the possibility Roe will be overturned, quote, "It's going to be open season, and it's going to have a disproportionate effect on poor folks, black and brown, but even poor white folks," end quote. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson made a surprise visit to Kyiv, his second since the Russian invasion began. He said today all evidence points to Russian forces taking heavy casualties in Ukraine. Great Britain came with a pledge to lead a program that could train up to 10,000 Ukrainian soldiers every 120 days in an unspecified location outside the country. Johnson also promised continued military aid and training on new military equipment. He did not detail said equipment. He said, quote, "We are with you to give you the strategic endurance that you will need," end quote. The European Union's executive arm recommended today that Ukraine be offered membership. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was said to be hoping for such a possibility. Johnson's trip followed one by the leaders of Germany, France, Italy, and Romania, who vowed earlier to support Ukraine without asking it to make any territorial concessions to Russia. Zelensky welcomed the visit, saying on Twitter, quote, "We have a common view of the movement towards Ukraine's victory. I'm grateful for a powerful support," end quote. Russian President Vladimir Putin began the war nearly 4 months ago. He alleges the invasion was necessary to protect people in eastern Ukraine controlled by Moscow-backed rebels and to ensure Russia's own security. Political and military support for Ukraine from Western countries has been key to its survival in the face of larger and better-equipped Russian forces. Zelensky has specifically requested additional immediate support in the form of more and better weapons to help with the battle in the eastern Donbas region. After a failure to seize the Ukrainian capital earlier in the war, Russian forces have switched their focus to the Donbas. The European Commission's recommendation that Ukraine be a candidate for membership will be discussed by leaders of the 27-nation bloc during a summit next week in Brussels. The war has increased pressure to fast-track Ukraine's candidate status, but the process will likely still take years. Two Pacific Northwest cities will be on the roster for the 2026 World Cup, but not Portland. The first 16 cities of the 2026 Soccer World Cup have been announced, and both Vancouver, BC, and Seattle made the cut. The tournament will largely be played in the United States, with 11 sites having been chosen here. A few cities dropped out of the running because of burdensome financial demands from FIFA, the soccer governing body. Chicago, the home of the U.S. Soccer Federation, Minneapolis, and Arizona dropped out of the North American bid to host. Baltimore, Maryland's withdrawal means this will be a rare World Cup, with no matches near a host's capital. Mexico City's Estadio Azteca, which hosted the 1970 and 86 finals, will become the first stadium to have three World Cups. Gianni Infantino is the president of the Fédération Internationale de Football Association, that sport's governing body. He said, quote, "By 2026, soccer, or football, will be the number one sport in this part of the world," end quote. The 1994 tournament did set records, with a 3.59 million total attendance and an average of 68,991. The capacities of the U.S. stadiums for 2026 are all 60,000 persons or higher. Infantino defended FIFA's financial demands for bidding sites, which included sales tax exemptions. He said the World Cup supports FIFA's members and that 75% could not sustain operations without the monies. Specific sites for each round will be announced later, with worldwide television times being a factor for the final. New Jersey sues Ford for dumping toxic waste. Cherokee Nation rescinds ban on flying the Oklahoma state flag. And New Mexico settles with the EPA over mine spill. With those stories and more, it's Art Hughes with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. The state of New Jersey is suing the Ford Motor Company for dumping paint sludge and other toxic waste on Ramapo-Lenape land for decades, beginning in the 1960s. Tribal members say the contamination is the source of numerous illnesses and even deaths. CBS News reports the land contains arsenic, chromium, lead, and other toxins, even after several cleanup attempts. The waste comes from the Mahway auto plant that dumped thousands of tons of waste into the forests and mines in the area. The commissioner of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection told CBS the automaker's actions are the definition of environmental injustice. The state is seeking an undisclosed amount of money. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. has reversed a decision to stop flying the Oklahoma state flag at tribal facilities. Coco TV News reports Hoskin signed an executive order earlier this month banning the state flag on Cherokee property, but he changed his mind after council members and citizens objected. Hoskin originally said putting the Oklahoma flag on par with the tribal flag was inconsistent with tribal sovereignty. He says he's since been persuaded by concerns that the action could deepen divisions between the tribe and the state. The U.S. Supreme Court ruling that handed tribes expanded criminal jurisdiction has been the source of disagreements between tribes and Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt. The state of New Mexico has reached a $32 million settlement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over the 2015 Gold King mine spill. Contractors working for the EPA caused the release of thousands of gallons of mine drainage into the San Juan and Animas rivers. The spill contained acids and toxic heavy metals that disrupted water use, including drawdowns for drinking water and agriculture, downstream onto the Navajo Nation. The state filed suit against the federal government in 2016. Officials secured an $11 million settlement from the mining company on behalf of water users in 2021. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer rejected plans by the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians for an off-reservation casino and resort. The proposal for the $180 million project has been in the works for more than 14 years. Because it's not on tribal land, it needs both state and federal approval. The Interior Department signed off on the plan in December 2020, starting the clock for the state to act. MLive.com reports Whitmer informed the U.S. Department of Interior that she can't approve the Little River Band project until she knows there's a decision on the status of the Grand River Band, which would likely pursue their own casino if they are granted federal recognition. The Peacock Network show Rutherford Falls is premiering its second season. The comedy show has a Native storyline supported by a number of Native writers, producers, and actors. KLCC's Brian Bull catches up with Lakota actress Jana Schmieding about what's in store for the show.
Schmieding plays Regan Wells, a member of the fictitious Minneshanka tribe and friend to Nathan Rutherford, heir to the town's colonial legacy. That legacy and their friendship was tested last season, but season two suggests they're on to new misadventures.
Adversity makes us stronger.
No, Rink, is this sweater too sexy?
For what?
What about a vest?
Schmieding says with the world building of Rutherford Falls established in season one, the writers cut loose with season two.
It's a very comedy forward season. We have things like a Halloween episode. We are doing some goofy stuff. Regan decides that she wants to apply for a plot of land on her res. So we see tribal bureaucracy this season. We have a Pretendian episode.
Rutherford Falls has won praise for its portrayal of Native Americans due to its team of indigenous writers. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Art Hughes.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 17th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Art Hughes, Eric Tegetoff, and Nadia Ramlagan. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming,